Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by SpannersReady.com, We Live F1, and Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station. I'm your host, Spanners Ready, and I'm joined this week by Downforce boss, Jake Sanson. Thanks for joining me, Jake, and filling in for Matt Trumpets in Gay Paris.
Oh, well, I'm hoping he's enjoying Paris. I kind of wish I was there as well. But fantastic. Thank you for making me the honorary American tonight. Well, that's not actually true either, is it?
No, because we do have a few Americans in our back pocket. They add class, a little something. Jake, us podcasters and commentators, we talk about motorsport. We walk the walk. No, we don't. We talk the talk, but we don't walk the walk. Except this week, you emulated Nigel Mansell with a bit of real race car action in a specially adapted race car.
Specially adapted in that I could fit in it, yes.
They must have at least stiffened the suspension.
They didn't, actually. No, there wasn't a major amount they changed. Well, yeah, I was invited by PDC Racing to go to Alton Park in Cheshire for a track day. So, I got to sample some proper racing machinery in a Vauxhall Nova that races in the stock hatch in the 750 Motor Club and in a Porsche 924 that races in the British Racing Sports Car Club's Toyota's Porsche Championship. I had a ball, an absolute ball.
Well, I mean, what did you learn from that? I presume this is your first time in a proper race car on a proper racetrack.
I've done some oval racing before and I've done some karting before. But in terms of racing on an actual proper racetrack, yeah, this is the first experience of driving a race car on a track. I had Pip Hammond and Gavin Johnson to coach me through the day. They were fantastic. They really coaxed me to bring me out of my shell. And by the end of the test, I was fast enough to be on the back three cars on the racing grid.
Well,
I could have been, you know, at the back of the grid and competitive.
That's actually amazing. So do you think that's going to change the way you commentate on events like that now?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've learned an awful lot about what racing drivers actually have to do to push a car to its limits and the difference between driving fast and driving like a racing driver. It's actually quite different because you can drive fast and be, you know, pretty rapid, but being a racing driver is a lot tougher because you have to push the car faster than you think you're comfortable going, but be smooth and be precise and be, you know, just so with the gear changes, just so with turning. Throttle has to be exactly the right point to get the good. It's so tough. You know, I've got such a better appreciation for racing drivers, not just at Formula One level, but any level. It's so tough.
I mean, I'll ask how your stomach dealt with it because my kids were pushing me to drive my Peugeot 2008 like a race car. And I thought, okay, I'll appease them by putting some G-force, you know, on the chicanes. And by braking, you know, enough to lift them out of their seats. But actually, because we were in Milton Keynes and it's chicane after chicane, I succeeded in making myself feel sick and they were there going, faster, Dad, faster. But did you manage to sort of hold your dinner down?
Do you know, it's funny, a lot of people get queasy after pushing it to the limit. I genuinely didn't. After about sort of four or five laps, I was actually getting relaxed at going faster. So I was feeling, you know, really confident, really smooth. And I kind of wanted a few more goes at it. But, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to get out there and do something else again. But I just want to say here and now, a huge thank you to PDC Racing, to Gavin, to Pip, to Esther, to all the mechanics. You know, they did a fantastic job and made me feel very welcome. And I feel a lot more like I know what a racing driver is actually capable of now. It's awesome.
And you managed to speak to Sir Chris Hoy, amongst others, which you can hear. Did you put that on Pitboard on Downforce Radio?
Yes, the last edition of Pitboard, which was a very pivotal one for Downforce Radio, because as a result of that show going out, we smashed through 500,000 listeners worldwide, which is absolutely fantastic. And that's such a milestone for Downforce Radio as a channel. We're so grateful to everybody for being involved in that. But yes, the Pitboard show had Sir Chris Hoy and Jason Kenny with 12 Olympic gold medals in cycling between them. They have six each, of course. They've both become professional racing drivers of late. And yeah, such great guys. And the whole interviews with them are on the last edition of Pitboard. Go check it out on downforceradio.com.
Excellent. And of course, I think at Downforce Radio on Twitter and at Jake Sanson. So there's all your plugs out the way at the same time, Jake.
Absolutely. Yeah, all done. All done and dusted.
Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. For those of you just finding us, we are an independent podcast hosted by SpannersReady.com. But we also have a fantastic relationship with Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station. We aim to bring you your race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here, so you can play this with kids in the background or in the car and at work. This week, we are going to quiz our guests to see who has the best F1 knowledge this week. The subject of that, I believe, is launches and testing. We look at the launches we've had this week and find out who our panel is rooting for in the inter-team battles. All right, joining us, we have an esteemed array of people that we will get to know in more depth during the show. We have Goldie, Alex Goldschmidt. How's it going, Goldie?
Evening, Spanners. Evening, everybody. Yep, everything's going well. Looking forward to a great 2017 racing season because mine started back in January.
Ryan Ferret Ferris from Downforce Radio.
Hi, Spanners.
And from America, to add a bit of class, Vortex Motio. How's it going, Ken?
Howdy, cowboys. How's it going?
You sound like off the telly. I love having Americans on. All right, Jake, you'll be laughing on the other side of your face. Before we go to big, dirty news, you are going to be tested, sir. Are you ready?
As I'll ever be.
Your topic is testing. Which driver had to skip the opening race in 2014 due to a mysterious accident during testing?
I believe that would be the Williams driver, Valtteri Bottas.
No, right? It was Fernando Alonso on turn three of Barcelona. Yes. Come on, the mystery jinx to the right-hand side. He blatantly passed out. Allegedly passed out. I'm getting good at this. Pascal Wehrlein is missing the first test this year as he recovers from an accident at the Race of Champions. Who was he racing against?
Well, I'll stick with the Williams theme. That was Felipe Massa.
One point. Good. Which team controversially and allegedly illegally tested with a current car and drivers for Pirelli in secret in 2014 but escaped sanctions?
Oh, that would be AMG Mercedes.
It certainly was, allegedly. I said allegedly. True or false, Michael Schumacher tested in a Ligier in 1994.
He did test in a Ligier in 94.
That is true. He also tested for Sauber in 1997. Which driver was going to make a sensational comeback for McLaren in 1995, only to be too large to fit in the cockpit?
I remember it well. It was Nigel Mansell.
That's great. You have some amount of points now. I think you've got four, actually. So there we go. Two left. Which driver crashed in a test of the new Pirelli wet slick tyres last week?
I'm going to guess it was Sebastian Vettel.
This is ridiculous. You're getting 5 out of 6. Yes, it was. And what is the name of Ferrari's very own test track at Maranello?
Ah, that is Fiorano.
Fiorano, 6 out of 7, Jake. That is going to be very, very hard to beat. Let's go on to some big, dirty news. Big, dirty news. So, big, dirty news. Topic one is launches and liveries. Now, I know, Ryan Ferret Ferris, you are the resident person here who really cares what they look like. You like the pretty red one or the pretty pink one with a blue bow. Let's find out what you thought were the highlights and lowlights of the car launches. But first, Ryan, in general, what's your first impression of the 2017 car from a, you know, from a sort of spirit point of view? Does this feel like Formula One to you?
Oh, man, they look absolutely amazing. I think with Force India sort of possibly borderline the uglier out of all of the bridesmaids. yeah, I think they definitely look really nice this year, especially with, now they've added the the shark fin, which I think is quite nice. But I believe your opinion differs, Spanners.
Oh, to me, I think it sort of, it makes it look a bit cheap. It's the sort of thing IndyCar would have, and it fundamentally changes the profile of the car side on. So instead of sort of sloping away to the back, you know, you come up to the air intake and then it's just a straight line. I don't know, for me, it'll take some getting used to, because to be honest, all the cars, even the 2014 cars, look ugly until you get used to them, and then they don't.
Yeah, and a lot of them have changed the air intakes, but of the air box above the driver's head. But I think if I was to go on one of the liveries that I sort of find very most interesting, it's got to be the new McLaren livery, because, and this is where I'm going to go full on English GCSE on this, I believe that the McLaren livery is in fact three liveries merged into one livery, which symbolizes the beginning of McLaren being orange. Then you got parts of white in the livery, which symbolizes when they were with had Marlboro as their sponsor, so they had the red and white. And then you got the black, and in fact part of the side pod looks very much like when they used to be sponsored by West, when Mika Hakkinen was racing for them, because it's sort of a black with like a white sort of dot in it. And it also has the Bruce McLaren Kiwi on it.
And just before we go to Jake and find out what he thinks of that, a big hello to the chat room who's joined us on YouTube on the Spanners Ready channel. Just a quick hello to the guys who've said hi: Esteban Garcia, Paul Wright, Ray Parker, Sam Williams, Evangelinos. I'm just going to leave it at that because I got your name wrong a couple of weeks ago. All you guys, thank you. You're very welcome. And I will monitor the chat as best I can. Jake, was this the promised return to McLaren's history? Because I was a little underwhelmed when I saw it.
I think people should be positive about it. I mean, we've been screaming out, haven't we, for decades that McLaren should be back to orange. And so McLaren did as they were asked by the fans. They went orange and nobody's satisfied. It's a bit ridiculous because, you know, it's just, unfortunately, it's kind of a fulfilling prophecy that, you know, sports fans are never happy with anything they're given, even if they're given what they want. Me personally, I think the car is stunning, absolutely stunning. I liked the fact that they decided to listen to the fans and give them what they wanted. They've given a nod to their heritage. The white in there for the, you know, the vintage Honda colors of the 60s is bold in there as well. I love that. And, you know, they're doing a little bit of the current modern era along with their heritage. I think it's fantastic. And personally, I think two or three races in, when they're starting to knock on the door of podiums, which I still am convinced they will do, particularly with Stoffel Van Dorn, I think people will be, I think they'll forget it quite quickly. I think it's an awesome livery. So sexy.
Yeah, I mean, coming on to what you were saying there, it's nice to see the Taroko Orange making its well-respected return. And I think Zach Brown said, look, we listened to actually what the fans said, which was good. I do like Ryan's dissection of sort of like the Herald's back to it with the flying Kiwi actually being stuck on there, because there's going to be this big documentary apparently about Bruce and how McLaren was founded later on this year. So that's another thing to look forward to. But yeah, it wasn't until I actually saw photos of the car in sunlight that I really actually got a true measure of the paintwork, because when they put it in the technical center, it's all very dark. It's meant to sort of accentuate the color, but I don't think it did much of it until we saw it out on track finally.
I think does it not look like a manor to you, Ryan?
Well, I did see a picture of some Fanta Zero, and the can of Fanta Zero did look very much like the current McLaren. But I mean, you know, the colour scheme's still good. I do like the car. And the weird thing that I do find about it is the sort of the winglets on the nose. you know, it almost looks a bit like gills. So it's actually, yeah, so it looks like a gills for the shark, then it's got the shark fin. So yeah, that's, I just thought about that. Yeah, that's pretty cool, that.
But actually, coming back to what you were saying about gills, did anyone notice the rear wing on the car? It's actually got quite a few gills on the back of that as well, and it's angled as well. So there's a lot of aero possibilities that we're now seeing coming through to 2017.
Now, speaking of aero possibilities, as a Tech Time regular, Vortex, Mortio, obviously we couldn't get Summers on this week, Matt's in Paris, Catman's still, oh, my baby, I need to look after my baby. So, I mean, you're the next down the register for Tech. Generally, what are you seeing from, you know, these cars? We've had a good look at them. They're wider. They seem a bit longer to me. This shark fin is apparently helping keep the downforce in the corners with your, what's your general impression of from what you've seen?
There's two different directions, and one of them is taken by the world champions, Mercedes, and that is that, and the quick way to see it is by the rake. And so Mercedes has stayed with a relative flower, no rake, and they are, it's winglets galore on that silver piece. Well, at the same time, on the very opposite end, it seems like we have Red Bull. All I saw was that kind of preview picture or whatnot. And so looking forward to seeing that piece tomorrow. But what I noticed was had that rake, and it also had something that really excites our friend Summers, which is that there's a certain elegance to a newly designed car, and that is shown on this year's Red Bull. So that, to my mind, is kind of the two extremes and the two best, obviously, chassis builders that everybody else is trying to raise their game to.
All right. You might want to do a little reset there, Ken, as you're Daleking quite badly. But hopefully that will settle down. Maybe it's just the Skype demons. But Ryan, you've told me what you do like. What did you dislike?
What about the McLaren or about the other opposition sort of?
Well, generally it helps if you listen to the question, but yawn. I'll express it one more time.
Well, you know, I'm young and all that sort of stuff. Why do I want to listen to an old fart, you know?
Ryan, which launches and liveries did you not like?
Well, you know, there was the Force India. They sort of went for a very questionable nose that I alluded to as being something inappropriate. But yeah, I think the Force India is possibly the worst on the grid. I quite like the Sauber.
The Force India. Okay, so the question was, which is the worst one? So the Force India.
Yeah, I know. I've said it's the Force India. The right, Force India is the worst on the grid.
No, I don't know. Is this right? Is this sober Ryan that's being difficult, or is it too drunk Ryan? Really, really hard to tell. But
interesting. You asked me what's the worst, and I told you what's the worst.
And then you waffled on for another 2 minutes about Sauber. Ken, with the Force India, though, isn't it interesting that the fork nose, it's basically the same fork nose, but they've just sort of trimmed a bit off the front.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I'm kind of glad that they're continuing with that. To my mind, though, I'll say the worst one, if we're talking strictly, livery, is got to be the American team Haas. And the reason is, and I've dressed specially for this, I've got my blue sleeves, my bright orange shirt. Formula One this year, we have color on the grid. Color. We shouldn't be shades of gray and black. And that's got to be one of the great things about McLaren. As Alex mentioned, Zach listened to the fans, went retro, threw that bright color in there, orange. It looks bright in the daylight, supposedly. And that, I think, is the most positive thing, except for that darn American team. A lot of gray on there. I'm not a fan.
But it's not gray. It's not just like, you know, the dull silvers that we had on about 8 cars last year. It is gunmetal gray. It looks like a fighter jet. It looks like a tank, a battleship. And I absolutely love it. Jake, you're with me, aren't you?
I absolutely am. Yeah, I genuinely think the Haas F1 for 2017, that with that colour scheme, it is the Formula One car that James Bond would race if he was a Formula One driver. I think it just looks so cool.
I agree.
And it's incredibly dynamic, incredibly voracious in terms of its looks. If it goes as quickly as it looks, then that thing will be on the podium regularly in 2017. And you've got to think about it in terms of, you know, that's the second year for a brand new team with a lot of ambition, a lot of motivation. They've gone very aggro with the aero, which is incredible to see for a brand new team. Their two drivers, incredibly motivated, Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen. I think they could be the dark horse this year. A lot of people have been speaking about some of the other teams on the grid. I genuinely think we could see some fireworks from Haas this year, and I really hope we do.
Ray Parker in the chat room says, grey is a colour, kind of. Paul Wright suggesting that the Ferrari's ugly. I'm sure we'll get to the Ferrari in a minute. Alex, what was your thoughts on the Haas?
I am going to sort of say this. If Dieter Gass and the people at Ingolstadt want to actually sort of reprimand them for their design, they're more than welcome to it, because if you notice on the shark fin, it's very much a sort of like a, it is a combination of black, white, grey, red, which pretty much we saw up until last year on an Audi LMP1 hybrid prototype. But yeah, I do have to agree with Jake. It does look really good. But the car that's really caught my eye, it's the Toro Rosso. It really is the Toro Rosso. I just thought, well, first of all, if anyone did notice on the actual front of the wing, by the actual nose, which looks very Mercedes-esque, there is the Italian flag, because obviously the team is based in Faenza in Italy. But the blue that they've gone for, it shows that we are going to have a serious amount of colour on the grid. So you're going to be able to tell the cars apart this year as well, which is a good thing.
That's a good thing. And I really would love it if they made more of an effort to tell the drivers apart. Yes, you've got the number or whatever, but if the drivers could have their own little flash on the shark fin or something like that, like a quick identifier, I'd really appreciate that. So from a purely aesthetic point of view, Alex Goldschmidt, what's your top pick?
It is the Toro Rosso. I have to say it's the Toro Rosso, hands down. It's just what they've been able to do with James Key and the team. Literally, I think a lot of us in the chat looked at it. As soon as I posted a picture in earlier on when it got revealed, I just thought, wow, that's just brilliant. Just really looks brilliant. But like you say, with regards to if they actually had the three letters of the driver, maybe somewhere identifiable, maybe on the side of the end plate, on the rear wings or on the shark's fin, that could probably help a little bit.
I tell you what, that Toro Rosso is so bold. And I think one of the things about Toro Rosso as a Formula One team over the last 3 or 4 years at least is that the Toro Rosso F1 car has only looked a slightly deeper shade of whatever color Red Bull is going with that year. It's never really looked that different, and it's never had its own personality. I think the last time the Toro Rosso F1 car actually had its own personality that deviated away from what Red Bull was doing was 2008, when Sebastian Vettel won in Italy. That season, that was the only time really it looked slightly different, and it didn't even look that different. This year they've gone, no, we're our own team. We are different to Red Bull. Yes, we're the junior brand, but we are actually our own team. And a lot of the people in Toro Rosso, they have a friendly rivalry with Red Bull. They kind of want to go up against them and go, do you know what? We can actually do better than you. So I think it's a great step forward of independence for Toro Rosso to kind of step out of the shadows of Red Bull and go, well, yeah, you've got a good livery. Hasn't changed much in the last 10 years. We can do better. And they really have. It looks amazing.
Yeah, that's like us taking like a top podcast like This Week in Tech and saying, yeah, they're really successful. They've got a great formula, great contacts. We're going to step out of the shadow of great podcasts like that. No, I don't know. If they're going to be the junior team, I think the idea should be that they just kind of keep the same spirit and get as close to that team as possible. And if they were very close, then fine. Go off in your own direction and go off in your own spirit, but they're really not.
Well, it's interesting because their livery is a more youthful version of what Red Bull has done. So it's quite clever because they are the junior team. They are for the younger generation of Formula One drivers. So they've actually kept with the spirit of the team and the image is great.
All right, then. Well, I think Ryan used up most of our time on this with his mindless drunken waffle, but we haven't gone to Jake and Ken yet. So let's say just Jake and Ken, let's find out what's your best and worst briefly, Jake. Who won?
It's difficult because I knew who my favorite was until I saw the Toro Rosso. And now I'm not sure if the Toro Rosso is actually better than the McLaren. Personally, everybody's been dissing the McLaren to high heaven. I love it. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. And I think it's going to be somewhere between the McLaren or the Toro Rosso. My opinion might change in the morning once I've actually slept on it, and the Toro Rosso will look better than the McLaren. For now, it's McLaren. I think it's amazing, beautiful, followed quickly by the Sauber. I actually think the Sauber is really quite impressive. In terms of the most boring and bland, I don't like the Renault. I thought I did at first, but I don't like the Renault. I think it looks so as if cool. Pastor Maldonado's been given a test drive in the early livery, the all black one, and has crashed into the back of
if
the yellow one.
If you just said
one.
Something, so, I didn't hear what it was.
Oh, hang on. My phone. Hello, Google. Google's just piped up to interrupt the podcast. Apologies for that. No, I think you're wrong about the Renault. I think it looks super cool. But let's see. Like I say, these cars, they really do take a while to grow on you. At the moment, yeah. I think the McLaren looks like one of those sun-faded barbershop twirlies things that they put outside to indicate who they are. But who knows? Maybe it'll grow on me, Ken. What looks pretty?
Okay, well, I'm going to step out and be a little different and please our Tifosi fans and say that I like the boldness of that Ferrari, and I like that they've taken a lot of the white out of that thing, and it's a red, red beast. And I'm excited to see what that thing's going to turn out to be. But it's quite interesting to see what they've done. And that might reflect, you know, the big changes that they made rather late in the season. I mean, it was in the spring that Mr. Allison left, but nonetheless, it's pretty exciting for them, and so
yeah. And what car made you you know so sick that you would betray your secrets to Russia?
Well, and so I'm going to stay with you. You know, I got to say, even though I diss Haas for choosing gray, and actually, as far as gray is concerned, I love that kind of there's a creaminess to that color that I've seen so far. I kind of admire that, but I'm so pleased and I'm so tired of all the black and gray and silver that's filled our grid for the last two seasons or so. And I'm so jazzed to see all the color that we have on the grid this year that I'll probably just stay with dissing Haas. I like that color gray. I just wish they'd used a little bit more red or white and to balance it a little more.
Excellent. So the chat room saying that the Haas is sexy. That's Gary Gerhardt. The McLaren is amazing too. Gary, you've seen the McLaren with the black and white reversed? Me like, Sam Williams says, can of Fanta. Where have we got? Gary's also saying, miss you guys. Can't wait for this season of podcasts. And this season, the best place to find us will be on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice on Android. If you're really stuck on how to find the show, go to @MissedApexF1 on Twitter, @MissedApexF1. We've got all the instructions on the pinned tweet of how to subscribe, but generally go to where you find your podcast and search Missed Apex Podcast. But make sure you do subscribe. Don't find it piecemeal. Don't rely on me posting it on social media because I am terrible at remembering to do all of those things. Ken, Vortex Mortier, why is it when I talk to people like Bradley Philpott, Will Buxton, Alex Van Gene, people who are the top carters, they talk about you as somebody who's, you know, helps them out with timings and is a very informed gentleman. What's your involvement with these guys, particularly the British Racing Car Championship, Rental Kart Championships?
Well, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but it goes back to 2011 because I was checking my files and I started following it back then, and it fell out of a situation where a bunch of my racing buddies in Southern California had gone to Phoenix for what was known at that time as the International Karting Championship or something similar. I've messed that up, but in any case, they came back and they were talking about this British guy that had a funny name of Bradley Philpott, and he was wicked fast, and he was a really nice guy. Everybody dug him, and he was also a driving instructor. And so I was following the British Rental Karting Championship, and a couple of years ago, Bradley did a wonderful thing. He did a live draw for placing all the drivers in the grids, and he had four rounds of heats, 10 drivers, 9 heats per round. And so it ended up being 360 draws of names out of a bucket. And the live draw went on for 2 hours on this video. And I saw that and I thought, you know, that could be so much better. So I created a system for them where you draw one name out of the hat and it automatically populates on a spreadsheet where they're going to be located for all four. And I did that last year for them, and it worked out pretty good. They used that system this year, and I guess folks liked it.
Well, they're very fond of you, as we are, and having you on as an F1 commenter, ridiculously underfollowed on Twitter. I think it's because it's hard to spell. So let's make sure people know where to find you, because you always stimulate good conversation on Twitter. It's at Vortex. And if I say it Motio, that spells it better, doesn't it? Motio.
That's correct. Yeah, it's kind of the Latin spelling of motion or power. Motio, Vortex Motio.
Yawn, boring. Let's find out how much you know about F1 with your round of the quiz. So you have liveries as your subject. Which musical band helped launch the McLaren car in 1997?
Oh, good heavens. Well, I have no idea, so I'm going to guess U2.
If you want to be my lover, you'll have to do better than that. It was the Spice Girls. What was odd about the 2011 McLaren launch?
2011.
This is way harder than Jake's. I'll give you a clue. It was a public engineering spectacle.
I had something to do with a launch in the city of London, by chance, or
no? I'll alleviate you of your pain. The team built the car from scratch in front of the media in a public square in Berlin. Which team wanted to run two liveries in 1999, but ended up with an asymmetric zipped design?
Oh, that was the fabulous bar team.
Yeah, that's right? Fantastic. That's 1 point. You get 2 points, in fact, one for each side of the liveries. Which team ran in camouflage?
Wait a minute. I didn't get 2 points for any of my questions. That's unfair.
Jake, I think the sooner Jake accepts that I wouldn't allow him to win the quiz, the better. Oh. Which team ran in camouflage last year in testing?
Red Bull Racing.
There's a guy down the road with a Porsche, and he did up his car in homage to that. But I guess, well, it looks terrible just in his drive. But never mind. When was the last time McLaren ran in orange colours?
Oh, good heavens! That would be. All right, I'm going to go with 71.
They'd actually did it in two. Go on, Ryan.
Oh, I'm not 100%, but is it something like 2004? They did it during testing.
2006. There we go.
I know the driver as well, who was actually behind the wheel of that car.
Was it
me too?
It was Gary Paffett.
Gary Paffett. Yeah.
True or false, Vortex Mortio? Ferrari have always ran in Italy's national racing colours of red.
Well, there was a situation where they had their NART team run in the North American or the US colors, I believe.
So you are saying false. And false. That has given you 5 points. A very respectable turnout. Unfortunately.
Hey, what a...
Calm down, Sanson. You're in the cheap seats now. This is Ken's moment. 5 out of 7. And not enough to usurp Jake, so he's still in the lead. We have to say that these questions have come courtesy of Catman F1, and you should definitely follow him on Twitter as well. He is an F1 journalist. He writes currently for F1 Fanatic. And chat room, fantastic that you're playing along, but I can't possibly interact with that due to the 20-second delay. But no, absolutely great that you're playing along, and I'm glad that can be something you can participate in. All right, let's go to our next news item, which is the inter-team rivalries. Okay, it's not a news item. I just want to yell at you for your incorrect loyalties for next season. So I don't want to know really who you think will win, although we can pay lip service to those to that in the team rivals. I kind of just want to know who's your guy. Who are you rooting for? So let's go team by team, and let's talk about Haas. Vortex Mortio, the American team, who are you rooting for to win that inter-team battle?
I'm a fan of So normally I don't root for drivers, but I'll just cut right to the chase and say I'm rooting for Grosjean. I like that guy.
Jake?
I think it's going to be Romain Grosjean as well. I think he's well established. Magnussen, I think he's already peaked, unfortunately.
Really?
I think I'm not sure he can go further than he's already gone. So,
because when they dropped Perez, obviously what they said was, well, there's nothing against Chico, but we have Kevin. I mean, they could not have talked about him in higher terms.
And in the junior formulas, he was sensational. But I think he's just been given, I think he's done another Sergio Perez. I think he's just been given the chance too soon. And I think it's kind of ruined him a bit. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in WEC for 2019, to be honest. But yeah, I think Grosjean will beat him this year and that will hurt.
You're going to make that 3-for-3 there, Spanners, because I'm also going with Roman on that one.
I'm going to go Grosjean as well. I don't know, Magnussen, I think he has still got a bit left, but I think Grosjean has got the wiser head on young shoulders as well.
Okay, you're all wrong, unfortunately. Good try. But unfortunately, Kevin Magnussen is definitely the man you should be rooting for. This is a guy, he's very much still finding his feet. And I think it's unfair to say that he's peaked at such an early phase. If we're talking about peaking drivers, surely we can talk about Romain Grosjean, who had his 2 minutes of glory in a Lotus. He was very, very flattered by Kimi Raikkonen. So my man in the Haas this year will definitely be Kevin Magnussen. Nothing to do with my Danish family whatsoever.
Okay, no bias. Good.
No bias at all. So
shame on you, Spanners.
A big gap then at McLaren. We'll go to you, Ryan. Do you think that Stoffel Vandoorne can upset Alonso? Who do you want to win this battle?
I want Alonso to win it. Purely because I don't know. I think so many people are putting Alonso down as being, oh yeah, he is the best driver on the grid. I actually want him to, he's got a great teammate this year. I mean, he had a good teammate last year as well. But if people are making it out that Van Dorn is the be-all and end-all sort of young driver, I want to see Alonso, you know, beat him to it.
And Felix in... Oh, no, not you, Felix. Oh, I must say, actually, thank you to Felix in our Slack group, which I'll talk about later, because he helped me make sure that I picked the correct desktop computer because my poor old podcasting PC died. So thank you very much to Felix, too, who you know, like I look at the specs and I think, oh, i7, oh, yeah, that looks good. Oh, 3.5 gigawatts. That I've heard that in Back to the Future, but to have like a tech guy actually, you know, look at those figures and go, yes, that will achieve what you want to achieve is absolutely fantastic. But also in the Slack group, P Wright 48 says, I kind of want Van Dorn to lick Alonso. Maybe kick Alonso. I don't know about lick.
Oh yeah. Oh no, that's an image I don't want.
But Jake, really. what can we glean about Alonso if Van Dorn does end up beating him this season? Do we say he was always overrated? Do we say this is him past his best? You know, what's on the line for his reputation and his legacy this year?
Well, he made a statement at the McLaren launch that he'll make his decision about his Formula One future in the summer. And to me, that sounds like a guy who's already got one foot out the door, which is a shame because that's Fernando Alonso. You know, that's a guy who's won two world titles. But let's not forget, his last world championship was in 2006. Guys, you know, the longest period between one championship title and the next one is Niki Lauda's from 1977 to 1984. And I genuinely don't think you can do that anymore. I'm not sure Fernando Alonso has what it takes to be a champion again, not necessarily from his own driving, but he's in the wrong team with the wrong package. If he'd have managed to get the second Mercedes drive, then yeah, I think he might have been able to have one more crack at it. But I do think Hamilton would have beaten him. But no, I think Van Dorn will beat him at McLaren this year. And I kind of want that to happen just because I want to see Alonso say, enough with Formula One, I'm going to Le Mans. I think we all want to see that, really.
Sam Williams says in the chat, I want Van Dorn to win. Esteban Garcia, Van Dorn, he could be a surprise this year. Do you agree, Ken?
Oh, I am very excited about Van Dorn, but it is going to be his rookie year. He's highly respected by people that I respect a lot, and I'm expecting great things from him. But at the same time, I think I got to disagree. I think Alonso still is one of the best drivers on the grid today, that if he was in the right equipment, he could definitely fight and win a championship. He still has that. He was very young when he won his last championship. And so I think it's a great benchmark, though, for Van Dorn. We'll see how he is at the end of the year.
So actually, we could have a dual outcome here. Because Forsaken in the chat saying, considering Van Dorn was the first to score points last year for McLaren, he reckons Van Dorn is the real deal, and he says he's more than confident he can beat Alonso. But we could see two results here, because we see a two-time world champion. He's, what, 36 years of age. He knows Formula One inside and out. He could beat Van Dorn on points and consistency, yet still lose the moral battle if Van Dorn shows himself to be, you know, truly talented over a few weekends and then builds that consistency in future seasons. So a very, very interesting season at McLaren.
You haven't asked me who I'm thinking about with regards to McLaren, have you, Spanners? Because you asked me this question late last year, if I remember correctly, that we could potentially see Van Dorn coming in. I think the words that you used were come in and spank Alonso. And I'm glad that someone did actually say about the fact that Van Dorn did go into the car, substituted for Fernando, and got McLaren's first points last year. And that's without any real testing behind the wheel of the car. So I'm going to go with Van Dorn on this one. Sorry, Fernando. We know you want to go to Le Mans. Make it happen and go to Porsche.
Too right.
Rather more predictable, we have the Mercedes garage. Ryan, I'm right, aren't I? Valtteri Bottas doesn't stand a chance against the great Lewis Hamilton, who you love now because you're a real Brit.
Well, you
know. A true patriot.
True patriot? I don't think Lewis Hamilton's a true patriot, but, you know.
Ouch. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Ouch.
I'd put him more down as American than British nowadays.
Oh, Monegasque, but, surely.
But anyway, enough said about whatever. But I'd be rooting for Bottas, you know.
Because you're unpatriotic and you want the British driver, the British three-time world champion, to lose. Disgusting. Paul Wright agrees with me. Hamilton! Bottas will be very solid, but Hamilton will just outpace and outrace him. Forsaken says, yup, could not agree more with Alex, presumably about Alonso. But Jake, you've Downforce Radio, British flag flies high all over that website. You are backing our man, Lewis Hamilton, to easily beat Valtteri Bottas, good as he is.
Absolutely. Hamilton, 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 all the way. Bottas will win four races in 2017, and they'll be very good races too. But Hamilton will absolutely walk it. That is his team. That's his baby. That's his little universe. I can see Bottas doing a good job in places like Barcelona, potentially, you know, Hungary, a couple of places. But I think Hamilton will just walk him. It's just going to be what happens.
Now, I think Bottas, because, well, one, if Hamilton sort of gets his way and they ban the use of data between teams, I've heard from people at Williams saying how ridiculously brilliant he is at the setup of the car and general feeling for the car. So if it does come to the point where say they're not allowed to share data, I think when it comes to that sort of thing, I think Bottas would be on top of Hamilton, because it seems Hamilton's more of a Mansell sort of person and drives round the problems.
Bottas is, if Nick Heidfeld and my attitude to Bottas is, if Nick Heidfeld and Heikki Kovalainen had a love child, that would be Valtteri Bottas. He's just so bland, so boring. I just don't think he can do enough.
Even though he might have one of the wildest stress sensors in the world, ranging from probably what Bobby Brown or Eddie Murphy from Coming to America to even Jay-Z, I am going with Hamilton because it's his baby, as Jake said. He knows the team inside out. He is their golden child. Sorry about all the Eddie Murphy references in there, but hey, I think it's Hamilton in Mercedes.
Yeah, you could have picked Ryan Reynolds and Marshall Mathers, but you went that way. That's fine.
Well, let me just jump in and say that while Hamilton is definitely favored, I think Bottas is sort of the guy to watch because of what Ryan had mentioned, in that he is highly rated by people who have worked with him. And yet at the same time, he seems to have a weakness in that criticism has been his consistency. And the thing about the shoes that he's filling, which would be the world champion Nico Rosberg, of course, is that both Rosberg and Hamilton are super consistent. They're operating at a very high level. So he's Bottas will be climbing that learning curve, and how quickly he climbs that. And then also, if he performs with consistency at the very top level, he has, as Hamilton said, that mindset of a champion, that inner drive. If he shows that, his reputation will be golden, even if he's beaten by Hamilton. But if he shows that inconsistency that some people believe has plagued him in the past, it's one and done for Bottas, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. You know, he's got a 1-year contract, and I don't know what he can do to prove himself, because, you know, if he causes too much trouble, he's out the door. It's almost like the only way he can secure a second year is to play number two and be a good boy, get himself a couple of years of contract, and then sort of try and climb. I think if he flies too close to the sun this season, he's going to find himself out the door very quickly. I think people imagine that Mercedes hate Lewis Hamilton, but I think they're very, very on board. There's a lot of people who love Lewis Hamilton in that team. Paul Wright says Bottas is prone to being too clumsy, I think. And Ray Parker, in what might be comment of the week, sums up the inter-team rivalry at Mercedes perfectly by saying, "Lewis." That could be comment of the week.
So let's, such a football fan.
So look, guys, I would prefer this week to stick talking about the inter-team battles. I know we had a topic planned of team sport versus driver sport and data sharing. I think we can revisit that before the season starts. So let's split this in two right now. And let me just say thank you very much to the patrons at Missed Apex Podcast, who have supported us fantastically. If you look at the Patreon page for Missed Apex, I've tweeted out a few times, but I think you can search Missed Apex Podcast in there and find it. This week, I just mentioned that my podcast PC had died, and quite a few of them stepped up their pledges to the monthly sort of tip jar donations. And it really kind of took the sting out of going, right, I need to, you know, drop some big money on a new PC. It took the stress out of that in a big way. So I really, really appreciate the patrons. They cover the hosting fees for the website. They cover the hosting fees for the podcast, actually storing the podcast on a server on the internet. So in a very, very real way, this show is brought to you by the podcast patrons. As a bit of a thank you for that, and I'm not saying that hanging out with us in a Slack group is some like amazing thing or anything, but we set up a Slack group for the patrons of Missed Apex Podcast to have more access to chat casually to people like myself, to Ken, to Matt Trumpets is in there, Ryan Ferris is in there. And
how would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
No, we're having a great time in there. That's been up and running for about a month, and I think that's going to be quite good during the season. So I'm not kind of selling it to say, hey, contribute on Patreon and you get to hang out with us because we're so amazing. That's not how I'm billing it. This was something we set up for patrons, and if you fancy being a part of that, then please go to patreon.com and search Missed Apex Podcast. You have our thanks. So, Goldie, speaking of Goldie things, I'm sure someone said golden earlier. What are you up to? What you always go on about tin tops. You're always saying that somehow the clumsy, almost nightclubby nature of just rubbing up against another car and shoving them out of the way has anything, has even a patch on our open wheel racing. So, you know, are you still defending that?
I am still defending that because for everyone that might have been listening to Downforce Radio over the past few weeks, we will be bringing a British touring car specialised show called Race the Roof, which hopefully will have a pre-season title. Update. So that's one thing. I've also got some commentary lined up, which I will hopefully be working with my good friend Mr. Sanson at some point later on this season. Details to be announced soon, but that's very, very exciting. DTM, yes, I'm still 100% with that series. I'm actually heading off to Germany to the home of AMG, part of the Mercedes brand, at the end of March for some exciting developments there. But yeah, I still love my Formula One just like everybody else, and I want to see how these cars do. I want to see who becomes top dog in the relevant teams and also who wins the drivers and teams championships.
I like you, Goldie. Do you know why I like you?
Why is that?
It's not just because your beard makes me feel warm and comfortable, or your spiky hair reminds me of...
I am the only one out of all five of us representing the bearded nation.
You are, yeah.
And it's not just because your spiky hair reminds me of so many beautiful memories of 90s nightclubs. No, why I like you is because you do have a broad depth of motorsport knowledge. And for those of us who are a bit tunnel vision in our open wheel racing or just Formula One, you broaden our horizons, Alex. So that's why we have you on. Where can people find you on the internet? Don't tell me we have to spell your German name to find you on Twitter.
You do not need to do that to find me on the Twitter sphere, which is at Alex_G1977. Of course, regular panelist on Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station, recently on Pitboard this past Thursday. But of course, touringcars.net, where you can normally find me dribbling on about my tour at Tin Tops, but that will be happening on Downforce as well. Actually, thanks to Mr. Ken, I got some nice information on the British Rental Car Championship because I was actually co-commentating on the Sunday. And it looks like I'm going to be back there next year with James Auld.
Okay, and your future of coming back on Missed Apex Podcast might be determined by whether you do well in your round of the quiz. 6-2B,
oh,
Alex,
no.
6-2B.
Oh, yeah, well, that might depend on that, but also it depends on how often you want me back on this show as well, Spanners. That's another thing you forgot.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. So if I want you back on, I should rig it. I mean, rig it. Okay.
Sycophancy gets you everywhere.
The numbers round. Nico Rosberg retired. Boo. Quack, 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 quack. That's not actually written in the question. That was ad lib. So we'll not be taking the number one. Who are the only two drivers in Formula One numbering since 1974 to carry the number one who were not the world champion the previous year? If you can get just one of them, you'll get the point.
That's a toughie. That really is a toughie. Because it normally happens in Formula 3, but never known it to happen in Formula 1. I'm going to have to draw a blank on that one, Spanners.
Go on, Jake.
Can I say one of them? Because I think I know one of them. One of them is John Watson.
That's right, because he was subbing for Niki Lauda and just simply got in his car. Yeah. Alex, after the number one, what is the most successful number in Formula One?
Ooh. Would it be number five by any chance?
It is. I wonder how much of that is down to, I guess, Nigel Mansell and Sebastian Vettel.
Sebastian Vettel.
Michael Schumacher in 94.
But the funny thing is, in one of my drawers here, I actually have a 2009 Red Bull t-shirt with Sebastian Vettel's race number on it as well.
Stop rummaging around in your drawers and answer this question.
Oh,
Van Dorn.
Yeah, I'll make some accompanying noise as well, shall I?
Van Dorn takes number two this year. What was his number at Bahrain last year? Jake, you're a nerd.
I'm seriously going to kill myself because I am a McLaren supporter as well, and I should know this.
Just guess.
Get 31? Within
47.
47!
You're staying on 1 point. Who's the only person to win the championship with the number two car? Ha, 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 ha.
Alain Prost?
Oh, how did you get that?
I didn't get a clue.
And it's
like
number
that.
Two, so that is worth 4 points. Yeah, so you're doing well. What year... What year was the merit-based rather than historically team-based numbering system introduced? So basically, in what year did the number one go to the champion instead of, like, Ferrari?
Okay. Was it 2008?
It was, in fact, 1996, which is amazing, really, because that was sort of my Formula One awakening was in the 90s, and I just assumed the numbering, you know, was like that forever. So that's very interesting from Catman. Mm. Who is the only driver ever to use the number 13? Jake, you're a nerd. You know all of these.
Number 13.
I mean, it would be, you know, unlucky to have the number 13 and have a load of crashes. You'd think that it would cause that.
Oh, come on.
It's not Pasta, is it?
Pasta Maldonado, you draw level with Jake Sanson. What is the highest number to win the championship?
Cool, dear. I don't even know. I mean, is it 22?
Oh, so close. It's 27, and you tie with Jake Sanson, so there's a potential tiebreaker in the offing. Fantastic performance from Alex Goldschmidt there. Well, even Jake is courteously admitting that that was an amazing, amazing
performance. And that's got to be the most, gentlemanly sneer I've seen in my life for a very long time, Lord Sanson.
It's great to see that Goldschmidt is as good as me with clues. Excellent, excellent, good indeed.
Let's move on then to Force India. Let's find out who we're supporting in the Force India battle. Let's go to Ken. Who do you like? Who do you like in the Force India team?
Oh, Force India, I like that North American guy, Perez, candidly. Although, here's the thing. I'm really excited about Ocon. I think that he may be of the nature of Van Dorn, and that he has done some wonderful things in the junior formulas, performs well under pressure, grabs the points, very much like his countryman, Mr. Prost. And I am interested to see if he carries those types of performances into Formula One, because he may be driving a silver Mercedes soon if he does.
Esteban Garcia in the chat room makes a comment about touring cars. I just want to say I like you, but we frown upon that kind of thing. Is anybody fancy Ocon? Because honestly, I don't think we really saw enough to kind of get excited. There was no like Verstappen effect. Goldie.
Well, I'm going to not talk tin tops about this guy because he was only in DTM for half a season, but Formula 3 was where he really, really made his mark. He actually won ahead of a certain current Red Bull driver.
You know when you do that thing, if you go, oh, a certain so-and-so, as if we all know, I'm not paying attention and I don't know. Just say
well,
the name.
Because, well, considering the fact that Esteban's actually taken a longer stage to get to Formula 1 than Max has, Max has been fast-tracked, but Esteban's had to sort of wait a couple of years. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Esteban does in the Force India.
Paul Wright points out in the chat room that Perez will be smarting from the loss of high degradation tyres, perhaps one of his major skills taken out of the equation. Sorry, Jake.
I think Ocon might actually be a little bit better than Perez. I'm not sure where that comes from, because I actually really rate Sergio Perez, and I think personally Ferrari should have sacked Kimi Raikkonen and then hired Sergio Perez. I still do. I think Ocon might just pip him, though. I think the future of F1 can be named by five drivers: Wehrlein, Ocon, Van Dorn, Verstappen, and Lando Norris. I think they'll be the future of Formula One in years to come, and Ocon is definitely part of that. So this year you could see some very impressive stuff from him.
Wake up, Ryan. Who's going to win at Force India?
Perez.
Cool. Let's move on to...
Excellent. Short and sweet.
I think that as well. I really am a big fan of Perez, and I'm just... I think I'm like Hülkenberg fans. Maybe I'm as deluded as... Diluted? Maybe I'm as deluded as Hülkenberg fans in that I think Perez is going to come good, and I've got high hopes this season. I just if Force India have the ambition to push him forward, I think he is going to be a clear number one out of that pairing. So we're going to go to Sauber. Is anybody, and I've got my mean face on now, is anybody going to tell me they're rooting for Marcus Ericsson? Ken, really?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, for goodness sake! I think for goodness sake, Ken!
So if you ask, what is one of the many things wrong with this podcast is that there is so much animosity toward Mr. Ericsson, who I think is might be underrated. He's a damn fast guy, or darn fast guy.
Troll. And, you're a troll, Ken. Are you really?
And not only that, yes, I am trolling, actually.
Oh, good.
And it's great to see the visuals of your reaction, I got to say, Spanners.
Okay, good. Good. So we can move on from Sauber. Thank you very much. Unless anyone has some pressing comment?
No, Ericsson will be completely, totally swiped, even by Antonio Giovinazzi, if Pascal Wehrlein can't do the job. Even Giovinazzi will wipe the floor with the man who can't steer around a chicken. He hasn't got a hope. No hope.
Past his teammates at Monaco.
Exactly. No hope at all for Ericsson. I can vehemently see him in V-Renault 3.5 at some point in the near future or something along the lines.
He has much of the Gutierrez about him. So Ferrari, let's speak seriously about Ferrari, Ken, because Vettel really has been out of sorts. He should be absolutely wiping the floor with Kimi, but it wasn't quite working out that way towards the end of last season.
No, it wasn't. And I think in some people that I respect believe that Kimi was definitely out driving Vettel. And Kimi's weakness became apparent. And on Sundays, Vettel would turn around and make good. But Kimi would be faster on Saturday and also at the beginning of his stints. And part of the problem is that Kimi's driving style, he tends to use the front tires harder than Vettel. And so as a consequence, he would go through his tires faster. And on Sundays, he'd start out fast, Kimi in his stints, and wouldn't be able to, and would run shorter stints. He'd use up his tires. So it will be interesting to see how, with the new tires that don't degrade as much, if Kimi, in fact, makes it a very clean sweep on top of Vettel or not. Vettel, he needs to step up his game, frankly. And the kind of outburst he was doing on the radio speaks of a very frustrated racer who is a little perplexed. And so he needs to come good, I think. It's going to be an interesting season.
Absolutely. Just jumping back to Sauber for a minute, because the chat room says, don't mess with the Swede, Paul Wright. I will clean up that language on your behalf. Forsaken is, what do you mean, even Giovinazzi? Gio is the future. But, you know, I think we're saying even a last-minute substitute rookie is going to come in there and wipe the floor with him. I've heard a lot of people getting excited about Giovinazzi, despite the face that Jake Sampson is pulling. Ray Parker says, one of the Sauber drivers... ... I think there's 17 Sauber drivers on the books there. But Jake,
yes,
Jake, going to Ferrari. This is, it feels like it's a bit make or break for Sebastian in his journey against Kimi Raikkonen.
It's make or break for both drivers and the whole team. 2017, they've got to up their form. They were completely cakewalked by Red Bull last year. Vettel looked average, shouty, and petulant. He actually looked more immature than Verstappen at times last year. And that's going some when people have been, you know, throwing the animosity to Verstappen. I think Vettel was completely disrespectful to every, you know, Formula One World Championship he's ever won last year at times, particularly in Mexico.
To the fans, to the sport. Yes, agreed.
Complete petulant child, and he needs to completely transform himself in 2017 to get the respect back of a lot of people. Whether he'll beat Kimi or not, I don't know. And it's interesting, Ken, you made the point about Kimi being faster on Saturdays. I think I know why, and it's that Kimi can only be bothered for one lap. So obviously he can put his best in for one lap in qualifying. That's it. Great. Vettel, I think he will beat Kimi. I don't see Kimi beating him, but it seems interesting that for the last 2 years or so, Kimi's actually wanted to try and beat him. Before then, he was like, oh, I can't be bothered. But recently, he's like, no, I want to keep my paycheck. I want to hang on to this. So he's trying to make more of an effort. If Kimi beats Vettel this year, I think it could be the end of Vettel's career at a top team. I genuinely think if Kimi beats him, Vettel will not get another shot with anybody like Red Bull or Mercedes, because everyone thinks that Kimi is, you know, on borrowed time anyway. He's on borrowed time. So Vettel has to beat Kimi. If Kimi beats Vettel, it's game over for both of them.
Paul Wright is defending his language by saying, sorry, I was quoting a certain rival podcast, which is confusing because as far as there aren't other F1
podcasts. No!
No, I don't think so. Ryan, what do you make of the Ferrari battle?
Well, I don't know. I don't really know who to go for, really, because I both like them. But you know, I might go for, Sebastian Vettel purely because he's got a good taste in comedy, I hear. You know, he likes his Python and,
He definitely, Ryan, you're not making a bad point there. He definitely seems like a nice bloke. He's just not doing himself any favours, which is weird because he comes across to me as somebody who wants to be liked and somebody who is you know, a generally likable person in real life. Yet he doesn't seem to be aware that the way he's behaving and acting is turning a lot of people off him. And I think if he could see it from our eyes, he would sort of be like, oh no, I didn't mean for people to not like me. I think he would want people to like him.
Yeah, but the thing is, the antics in Mexico, I actually found quite funny and I actually quite liked it. You know, it's sort of, in fact, my mum, who like never watches Formula One, who says, why do you watch that? Because it's an absolute snore fest, actually started sitting down and watching it thinking, God, this is actually quite entertaining, this.
So Forsaken in
the
chat.
Can we have 2015 Vettel back rather than 2016 Vettel? You know, the Vettel that used to poke fun at Hamilton and Rosberg when they were having their arguments in the press conferences, because I thought that was magnificent. Him trolling Mercedes boys was the best thing about F1 in 2015. I want that Vettel back again.
Can we not have both? Because then, like, if we didn't have 2016 Vettel, we wouldn't have such amazing quotes that came out of his mouth last year, like "What are we doing here?" and all that sort of stuff.
I preferred Vettel in seagulls mode in Canada than I did in Mexico, to be perfectly honest. I thought he was funnier trolling two seagulls into turn one in Montreal. That was more entertaining for me. I didn't like him swearing his head off at Charlie Whiting. Okay. I think Whiting should have thrown the book at him, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see what the chat room is saying about Vettel. Vettel's problem last year was he had no confidence in what he was doing. I do love Kimi, and I think people still shorthand him, but it's clear that Vettel has little patience with how Ferrari have performed. And yes, you could argue that maybe he was promised the world and delivered nothing. Kimi has too few feelings and Vettel has too many to fit in a Ferrari. Ray Parker, you might be right there. And Paul Wright says, I hate Vettel's hand gestures when he gets pole or a win. Ryan, Ferris, you recently went to some weird car thing and you posted like the worst Facebook Live videos. I genuinely hated you for about half an hour on Saturday because it kept popping up. But tell us all about it.
Well, I went to Race Retro on yesterday, which is pretty much it's a brilliant little show to do with the classic side of motorsport. You know, you don't really see any modern stuff. And as in my workplace, they refer to me as being 75 years old, not 19 years old. Purely because of my tasting
gin.
Music.
Oh,
and
music.
And my drink of choice. Yeah. But it was a great festival or show. They had the likes of Tom Christensen there. They also had, I think it was Harry Vatten in there, who, very much like Jerry Dunlop at the motorcycle show years back, stood in the queue with all the members of the public queuing up to go in until someone said, you do realize there's like a special entrance for you guys. And he's like, oh, is there?
And the plans for this season race-wise, we're going to hear some more Ryan Ferret magic on the comms for Downforce Radio.
Oh, yes, I very much hope so, along with my colleague Jake Sanson at Castle Coombe. Last season was absolutely amazing, and I'm just absolutely buzzing for this season because I don't know what it's going to throw at us.
Somebody from the Slack group said, I just clicked on, and I think he's talking about your live stream, and it just looked like he was standing in a field. You were so far away from the action. That was the worst live stream video ever. Ryan, where can people catch up with you? Because honestly, I know you sound like a dog that's in the process of being put down on this show, but when you are commentating, you come to life and it's worth watching. So where should people follow you? Let's start with Twitter.
Well, you can follow me at Ferret 115, that is IT, not ET. And you could also follow me doing some other podcasts that involves two wheels, but you know, you
all
you
right,
find that
you know, go on, you plug it, plug the stupid bike witchcraft show.
You can find me on Missed Apex. You can find me at Lean Angle Podcast, which is also on the Downforce Radio feed, the nation's motorsport station. And you can also find me.
You're gone. I have to say, Jake, first of all, Lean Angle, it was coming to spannersradio.com, but when you lost your bike show, I graciously handed it to Downforce Radio.
So charitable of you. So charitable of you. We're very grateful.
Didn't miss a beat, though, did we? So Downforce Radio had a bike show continuously, and I have to say, yeah, it's kind of a good one. I don't want to say better or worse, but better. Ryan, what else were you going to plug?
You can also find me commentating with Jake at Castle Coombe.
You
also
already
on
said
Downforce
that.
Radio.
You're a lunatic. You're crazy. You're like my little boy when, like, you don't know my boy is smart until you give him a task. Honestly, he's like Forrest Gump until you, like, sit him down with pen and paper and actually, like, apply him to something. You go, this boy, he has concrete in his head. That's what you're like. Maybe that's why I like you.
Some of the very best trolling from you here, Spanners. This is A-grade trolling.
It's not trolling. I'm just hosting. I'm just a man in a shed with a microphone and an internet connection, and I've got round four of a quiz. Let's go round again. Opening races from Catman F1. He wants to ask you, what is the only other country than Australia to hold an opening race of the championship since 1996?
Since 1996.
Yes, that's what I said, Ryan. You do the answers, I do the questions.
It's not Qatar.
That's right, it's not, but that's not how quizzes work. You tell me what it is.
No, it's... for some reason...
No, accept his first answer!
No,
because
he said he correct...
You're the chairman! Accept his first answer!
Do you know what? You said it's not Qatar, which is correct. 1 point. Monaco has... Monaco has never held the opening round of the F1 season. True or false?
I'll say false.
False. Well done. You gamed me. It has done so 5 times in the period between 1959 and 1966. True or false? 4 times world champion Sebastian Vettel has only won once at the opening race of the season.
True.
True. In 2011. For Red Bull. Name the other Australian circuit to hold an F1 race.
Adelaide.
Adelaide. Well done. I've lost track of the points, but I'd say you're definitely edging ahead of Sanson here. Who's the most successful F1 driver in terms of Australian Grand Prix victories behind Michael Schumacher?
Behind Australian behind... I want to say Senna.
Yeah, I know you'd want to say that, but what are you actually saying?
Who else could there be? Who else could there be apart from Raikkonen?
Raikkonen, nice one. Jenson Button in 09, 10, and 12. Man. 2 questions left. If you get these two, you enter the 3-way tiebreaker. Which is the most successful team at the Australian Grand Prix ever?
McLaren?
With 12 victories, correct. One more to be in it. Valtteri Bottas did not start the 2015 opening race. Why?
Did he have a back injury?
He did. Sustained in qualifying. We're into a 3-way tie-out, guys. We're into a 3-way tie-out. We're into a 3-way tiebreaker. So, we will do that after we find out who the boys think are going to do best at Toro Rosso, Red Bull and Williams. So, to keep it quick, only pipe up if you have a very strong opinion. Toro Rosso, who's going to win out in that battle? Jake.
Well, it's got to be Carlos Sainz, hasn't it? I like Daniel Kvyat, I do, but his morale is rock bottom and I don't think he's really going to recover this year. I'd love him to, but I think it will be Carlos Sainz.
Well, I think it's not so much morale. I mean, his morale might be high for the fact that he held on to his seat. And I know he came in with a good reputation, but I just think Carlos Sainz is a little bit special. It's the wrong guy to try and restore your reputation against. Ryan?
I want it to be Daniel Kvyat. I mean, he was actually starting to show his morale coming back towards the end of last season with him battling with Verstappen in Singapore. And I prefer him over Sainz. And I want him to do well because I felt that how messy Red Bull made the whole switch over, sort of, I want it to be sort of made justice.
Alex, you've returned. He has returned, but apparently without audio. Ken, give us your rundown. Everyone in the chat room is saying Sainz. Everyone.
Okay, so let me be harsh then, and I'll just say that, yes, definitely Sainz. And I think that, candidly, and Sainz is exciting because if you look at his junior career, he was not showing that potential that would have him being held on to by Toro Rosso. They don't want to get rid of him because they're afraid if they lose one of their top two drivers, he seems like their go-to guy. And it's pretty sad, actually, that Kvyat is still at Toro Rosso, that he's even part of their...
Feels kind of cruel, yeah.
The Red Bull. It's not just the morale or the confidence that Kvyat. I think that why he shouldn't be in Formula One is because he got lost, he was too slow, and he wasn't able to... All these guys have the opportunity to work with driving coaches and to examine their performances in detail. He did not do that. And from what I've seen from some people, he should have, and he didn't. And I just don't find that excusable that he does not approach his game in that way.
Yeah, okay, cool. And let me just say that comment. Oh my God, Google. Why? No, it's trying to find what I'm saying right now. I'm not searching you. Right now I have to. Seriously, it's playing.
Don't
now,
say okay, Google.
No, yeah. Now I have to write 116, edit out Google. So let me just say thank you very much to the live stream, and let me plug it one more time, because you can find us at spannersready.com. At spannersready.com. Live stream will take you there, or search Spanners Ready on YouTube and click subscribe. Everyone who subscribed gets a notification when we go out. We're going to try very hard to stick to 8 p.m. UK time on Sundays so that you know where to be to catch the live stream. We absolutely love you being in there and getting involved. And we already have
comment of the week.
Comment of the week winner this week is Forsaken, who says, Spanners, a man, a host, a shed dweller.
Comment of the week.
Red Bull and Williams left. Ooh, where should we go? I think Williams is a little simpler. So we have vast experience and questionable pace versus possibly raw talent and definitely a sick raw ambition. Who wants to wade in on Williams? Because for me, it's clear cut. Lance Stroll is in there as a number one driver. Unbelievably, he will be the clear number one driver to the very experienced Felipe Massa.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you, Spanners. I think Lance will be better than Felipe. I think he will do a better job. I think it's interesting that Martini are desperate to have somebody over the age of 25 to partner him because he's too young for their marketing.
That's great.
But yeah, Lance Stroll, I think, will do a good job. He's certainly had the backing and the motivating to get there. Still a lot of jury out on him based on his barrel rolling antics in Formula 3 in 2015. I think a few people are still not too sure whether his dominant performance last year was all money driven. But I think, you know what, he's got his place in Formula One with a team that would not pick a driver purely for money. Williams have enough money there in the bag to pick anybody they like. So they've clearly seen something in Lance that they genuinely believe in.
$20 million.
Well, yes. Yeah, I know. And yeah, obviously he's a Formula One driver with money, but come on, which Formula One driver on the grid doesn't have money? You know, they've all got to have money.
It's not just money. It's $20 million. It's not $8 million for a Renault seat. It's $20 million for a seat at Williams and $20 million to hire Anthony Davison to teach you how to drive in a three-year-old Formula One car. That's not money. That's money.
Okay, but yeah, I do think Lance will be better, and I think he'll shut a lot of people up in the process.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Jake, I respect you so much, and I agree with you so often, and yet you surprise me on this. I think you're wrong on every single count, candidly. First of all, I think Massa may be underrated. He may not be the brightest bulb in the chandelier, but he is a fast guy, and that's why he has such a long career. But and number two, Stroll is, I have not seen that he's really passed his barrel rolling antics. I mean, he had the whole grid in Formula 3 disrespect him in 2015 for being such a poor driver, unable to drive side by side with anybody. And from what I saw when he was in the fastest car, he won that championship last year. He still wasn't able to successfully drive side by side with somebody else. And there are some drivers that they have that weakness. Well, I look at Mr. World Champion Nico Rosberg, for example. He had a hard time with his own teammate, in part because his teammate could drive well side by side. Stroll is a guy that brings boatloads of money. Let's be honest here. That's the only reason he's with Williams. Williams does not have the opportunity to choose just any darn driver that shows up. They have to choose drivers that have a lot of sponsorship. And Stroll is bringing the biggest sponsorship. I think it's a win-win for Williams. I love Williams as a team. It hurts me to say this. It's probably the weakest driver lineup on the grid.
And I disagree. Williams are not the kind of team that need that because they've got their engineering wing, which is incredibly successful in other areas. So they're not a team that's on the verge of bankruptcy. There's obviously going to be some links there to let the money come in, but I do think Lance is a better driver than people give him credit for.
Jake, you're right there. They do have a business, but that doesn't mean that they can pour funds into the F1 team. I think the F1 team would pretty much, you know, fend for itself.
Yes,
yeah,
and no,
that's exactly right. Because they do operate those two businesses separately, and so that F1 team, they have been very much the classic garagistas. They mine their pennies, and they are very sharp. They do it probably better than any other garagista team, but they still need to make sure their drivers are able to support the team.
Against my better judgment, let's go to Ryan.
I'm actually rooting for Massa.
Oh, God, I hate you. No, just go away.
When Massa was at his at the top of his game, it was back when Formula One was mostly a downforce orientated sport over the engine side. Now we've got the drastic changes in downforce. I'm thinking that these are actually going to suit Massa's driving.
So could we see maybe two or three more years out of Massa, do you think, if he likes the taste of this?
Depending on his performance or whether or not you know, he gets too old that he needs, you know, the aid of mechanics to take him out the car and have a Zimmer frame off.
Oh, come on then, what is too old in Formula One?
He's my age. The chat room generally think that Lance Stroll is gonna get podiums. Some of them reckon it will be a Stroll for Lance. See what you did there, because Massa is clearly over the hill and has been for some time. I quite agree. Lance is going to beat Massa. He shouldn't have been brought back. Massa was only brought back for marketing. I actually suspect that Team Stroll had a big say in Massa going back, and I think that Stroll is probably wielding a little more power at Williams than is being publicised. And I was a little bit jaded by Claire Williams's comments that it felt like she was, I don't want to say too, you know, I love Claire Williams, but it felt like she was PR for Lance Stroll, and I hope I'm wrong. Let's go to, finally, what will probably be, or has the potential to be, the most decisive driver battle of this season, and that is, of course, Red Bull, because if that Red Bull car is in the mix, sorry, Jake, did you have a point to come back with Williams? You look so frustrated.
No, I was just picking up on the frustration of having to pick between two incredible Red Bull drivers. How on earth do you pick between them?
No, and it's amazing, but they're not the same. That's not to say they're the same by any token whatsoever, but if Red Bull have a decent car, this is going to be one of the most explosive partnerships. I mean, how do you pick? For me, I'm erring on the side of Verstappen is not fully cooked. And if Red Bull is the championship winning car this season, I think it's going to be Daniel Ricciardo. He has enough, but he might not have in a couple of years.
I totally agree, actually. I think that Red Bull is in a position where, in my personal opinion, they will have a car that can go up against Mercedes. And having picked Bottas, I was going to say going into this year that Mercedes will win the Constructors' Championship, but a Red Bull driver will win the Drivers' Championship. But now they've gone for Bottas, I'm actually more inclined to think that it will be a Red Bull Drivers and Constructors Championship because of how many points they are likely to score compared to Bottas. I just think Bottas will make too many mistakes. So I genuinely think we could have Red Bull winning both championships this year. It's very close. And I think it will ultimately come down to a showdown between Dan Ricciardo and Lewis Hamilton. And I don't know a single person in Formula One who's going to hate that battle. It's going to be absolutely incredible. I genuinely think next year, Verstappen will wipe the floor with everybody. This year, Ricciardo will win.
I will actually honestly agree with Jake there, but I would like to see a three-way fight this season between Verstappen, Ricciardo, and Hamilton. Because even though that car looks like it's got the nose of an anteater on it, where it could potentially suck opponents in front through the nose and back past its shark's fin through the DRS slot.
But it was designed by Adrian Newey. So
well, there you go.
They know what they're doing.
He'll flaunt any sort of potential aerodynamic excuse loophole in the rule book. But yeah, I think Ricciardo's got the measure of Verstappen on this one. Okay, credit to Max for actually jumping in and doing what he did last year. Very credible. But he hasn't got the experience in the team like Daniel has. And I'm going to put the Australian over the Dutchman.
Well, I am looking at Max's Formula 3 performance, and I'm thinking Max, though he proved he has things to learn last season, he is a fast learner. And so I think this is, as Jake put it, this is a situation where it's an incredible driver lineup, almost too hard to choose between them. We obviously know Danny Ric, he is talented across the board, he's smart, and he also thinks as far as the thing that a team manager looks for, he thinks about scoring points and what does he have to do to maximize his position at the end of the race. I look at him and that just turns me on so much because he is an overall great package. But Max is very smart and he's very creative and very courageous. And as we saw, they're changing the rules for him just because of his creativity under braking, for instance. He reminds me a little bit of a lot of people say the way he works in traffic and stuff of Hamilton, obviously, and there is that. But he also reminds me of Alonso in that Alonso has that level of intelligence about approaching the game. And I noticed it was Alonso that recognized what Max was doing and practically complimented him at it, even though a lot of people saw it as dangerous and rightly so. Yeah, I am very curious to see how this battle works out.
The real reason I have Ken on is because I can ask him a question and I know I've got enough time to go to the bathroom, refresh my drink. And, you know, it generally just acts as a nice pause for the show. Thank you, Ken. I am joking, of course. The chat room says, Paul Wright, I'm going Ricciardo. Forsaken, go Danny Ric. Esteban's going for Max. Sandra, oh, hello, Sandra Reynolds. One of the Hamfosi, one of the dedicated Hamfosi. Danny, but if he gets beat by Max, he will go. Interesting. Paul Wright, yes, Banners. Ric is a bit more polished and has similar speed, more consistent to Ray Parker. Max, I wish it would be Daniel, but it will be Max. Yeah, block capitals. What's that with the yelling? All right, let's go to the tiebreaker. Let's go to the tiebreaker of the quiz. The only person eliminate Ken, I did try. I gave you like double points on questions, but it is between the three. Let's just do elimination, okay? You get a question wrong, you're out. Jake Sanson, what's the lowest unused number in Formula One?
The lowest unused number.
That's what I said.
I'm going to go with 42.
It's 48. So if the other two get it wrong as well, you're saved. Actually, look, I didn't stitch you up, but that is definitely the hardest of these three. I honestly didn't mean it to be like that. Right, okay, let's go to...
Yeah.
Let's go to Ryan. What is the highest number ever entered into an F1 race?
Is it 99 by Adrian Sutil because he goes to the max?
Interesting. 208 for Leila Lombardi in 1974 for Brabham at the British GP, but it didn't race. It never raced. Therefore, the highest number to race was 99 for Adrian Sutil. That's a pretty hard question, and I think you've done really well there, Ryan. So Ryan is in the box seat, and let's see if Alex Goldschmidt can usurp him at the very last. In 2014, who finished second on the track but in Australia, but was later disqualified for an for a technical infringement.
Daniel Ricciardo, by the way.
It was, and you remain in the shootout. Oh, Jake, very unlucky. That was such a hard question. So then, let's go to, you will both answer this, true or false. True or false, Mark Webber never finished on the podium at his home Grand Prix. Ryan and Alex, give me your true or false. Go on, Alex, you go first. Be brave.
True.
Ryan?
I'm going to go true.
Ah. Mark Webber never finished on the podium at his home Grand Prix. That's true. His best finish was fourth. True or false, Pastor Maldonado retired from four out of his five opening races of the season. Who fancies it? Ryan?
True.
Ryan's going true. Alex, you going to gamble or stay safe?
I'm going to go true as well, I think.
Well, there we go. Well, I've only got one question left. True or false, Damon Hill is the only driver to carry the number zero.
False. No, true. True.
Ryan's going true. Alex, what are you
going
for?
I'm going true on that one as well.
It's going true. Okay, Ryan, what number am I thinking of?
That's where we're going now. That's where we're going now.
The number you are thinking of is between 0 and 100.
What number am I thinking of? All right, then. So I've got to think of an F1 related question all by myself. Okay, then. Here we go.
I've got one.
Go for it, Jake. Go for it.
I'm out of it.
Be quizmaster. Go.
I've got it. Okay. In which city did Benetton launch their 1996 Formula One car?
Okay, and before you interrupt, whoever gets the geographically closest place name will be the winner. I may have to get Google Maps up.
Oh.
Say a city, Alex. It's not the Nobel Prize. It's not Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It's Missed Apex Podcast. Available on iTunes and your podcatcher of choice. At Missed
Stop
Apex.
Stop plugging F1. While I'm trying to think.
Follow me at Spanners Ready and SpannersReady.com. Listen to my personal podcast about my kids and what I think about stuff. Spanners Log. It's like this, but more of me.
I'm going to go with Barcelona, just as a gut feeling.
Ryan.
I want to say...
You had the same thinking time as Alex. You don't have to start thinking again.
I want to say Switzerland. No, London.
London. Who's closer, Jake?
It was like Tunisia or something, right?
I can tell you that the closest geographically was Alex Goldschmidt. Because the Benetton of 1996 was launched in Taormina on the island of Sicily. So Goldschmidt was the closest.
I had a feeling it was either going to be Spain or Italy, so I thought I'd go with the Spanish equivalent just as a precaution, because I wasn't too sure it was going to be right going for Italy.
Oh no. Hang on, a bit of a steward's inquiry. Paul Wright says Alex is clearly Googling.
No.
What?
No.
He's an honest man. He's an honest man, chat room. We'd never have that. Congratulations. Guys, thank you for staying with us in Missed Apex and overrunning by half an hour. I appreciate you all staying on. I appreciate your patience, listeners, for listening to us every 2 weeks and allowing us to have those weeks in between. I'm not sure we'd have really filled every other week. I know some other podcasts kind of beat it over the head in the off season and start talking about hockey or their favorite chocolate or some such thing. But if you want to find out my opinions on that kind of thing, why not listen to Spanner's Log, now available on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Jake, Downforce Radio has a new partner. Please take 20 seconds to talk about them before we get out of here.
Well, we've got several new partners, but the most prominent ones we have at the moment are Clapham North, based down in London in the UK. Fantastic group of people. They're funding us all through the year, as well as sponsoring the BRSCC Mazda MX-5 Super Cup and racing in it with George Grant. And also Trade Price Cars, based down in Wickford in Essex, with their race driver Dan Kirby, who you can see in the British Touring Car Championship paddock racing in the Ginetta Super Cup races just before the BTCC races in 2017. We love you all. Thank you so much for being with us this year.
Make sure you tune into Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station, and find everything I do at spannersready.com. I'll see you in a week or two, but until then, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory that lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. We'll be right back. I have to say that Goldie not headbanging along to that was unbecoming of a Missed Apex quiz winner.
Well, all I'm going to say is I was quite impressed because you went a bit Metallica there, mate. Yeah, really impressed with that one.
I don't know. I don't understand this kind of heavy rock music, to be honest. My wife tells me all about it. But
you're going to have to YouTube some stuff then, mate, and really get yourself... You're going to have to grow your hair out. I mean, I remember when...
Skrillex. I tell you what I need to do. I need to follow, in fact, the band that provided that music, which was at Fallen to Flux, who happened to have a new album out.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.